The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic YouTube or Rockfin, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate your attention. We know you have a lot of options out there, and we couldn't do this show without the amazing support of our sponsor. Honey Colony has been great to us. Miriam Hanane is the owner of Honey Colony. She is the director of Vanishing of the Bees. She is has been on this program, and she's explained to us quite a bit about the way the world works. And she has taken her project, her Honey Colony, her honey documentary, and turned it into an actual store. Check out honeycolony.com. Use the promo code MACRO. Save yourself some money if you've bought your significant other things for many Valentine's days and birthdays and Christmases and things like that, and you've run out of ideas. Go to Honey Colony. You'll get a fresh batch of ideas, stuff that she's probably never seen before. So take a look at that. And we're also sponsored by Chemical Free Body. Tim James has been on the program a couple of times, just like Miriam. We get these alternative media people that are also starting small businesses, and we want to support them. And Chemical Free Body is phenomenal for that. Everything that they make is non-GMO. It's totally organic. It's got all of the good stuff, none of the bad stuff. It's a local company. They'll ship to you anywhere in the United States on orders $99 and above for free. So check them out. Promo code MACRO. We will, it's supporting these two companies, helps to support our show and helps to support them. It takes money and gives it to good people instead of to those pricks at Amazon. So we're happy to do that. And I'll tell you what, one of the great things about this show is that it's led me into friendships with other people that turned into the Union of the Unwanted Group podcast that I do with Sam Tripoli and Midnight Mike from OBDM and Ricky Verandas from The Ripple Effect. And through Ricky and through the Union of the Unwanted, I have had the opportunity to get to know our next guest, T. Snyder, who is a director, an author, a podcaster, and a cool motherfucker from Canada. What's going on, Tease? How are you, man?
Hey, Charlie. Thanks for having me on, man.
Well, I mean, every time I, you know, you've got, your podcast is called Conspiracy Synergy, and you have a couple episodes out there that I really have gotten into. I connect with your podcast. This is going to sound super arrogant, but I connect with your podcast because it kind of reminds me a lot of mine, which is you're kind of laid back and you're relaxing in your chair and you're talking about things that are important to you, but you do it in a way that I think a lot of people can connect with. How did you get started on the podcast?
Well, basically I was in the middle of, so my workflow and kind of what I'm all about insofar as what I bring to the table is how to go about confronting controversial material and conspiratorial material in a way that doesn't make people flip out, freak out, and run the other direction simply
Please teach us how to do that, because we're all still trying to figure that out.
Oh man, like in an interpersonal way, I am fucking garbage at it. But insofar as like what I can do in a professional capacity, it's a highly edited show. So my show is very, very different. And it's not ultimately something that's meant to be just listened to. It has to be watched.
You got to watch it. It's more of a visual show because you do a good job cutting in, editing. You're a director. Of course, course it's going to be visually appealing. I think if you're just listening to it, not watching it, you're sort of missing out on
part. Oh, totally. And so it's like 80% of the information is visual. And there's a lot of like, I've gone to the point of injecting one or two frame flashes. I am deliberately tickling the funny bone of people who understand the realities of how this is brainwashing. So that's not there to brainwash people. That's there to make you laugh when I'm talking about brainwashing so that there are those layers and those additional things. So I got into the podcast because I was in the middle of doing another project where I was trying to talk about controversial themes in a very, very funny and lighthearted way. And that project was called Viva La Santa. And it was a graphic novel that I just stopped working on in the middle of it to then shift over to do the podcast. And the whole idea of Viva La Santa was that it's in a dystopian world where everyone believes in Santa Claus, which is basically just a metaphor for believing in the state. You know, it's statism. Mm-hmm. It's just craziness. So that was something that I'm not a trained visual artist in the sense of like drawing. And so over the process of doing that, I was training myself to draw. And eventually it got up to a point where I was good enough at it where I'm like, I started doing other little side diagrams, one of which ended up being the shirt for Fashion Sedition, and another one being the Les Millennials kind of graphic.
That's a good one. With the cell phone.
So that kind of stuff led me to a point where, and those of us who are more awake, we're in touch with nature in a way. And so it kind of steps forward at times and it's like, okay, you learned the thing you need to learn. Go over here now. And so it was one of those things. And just in the middle of the show, I'm like, nope, I need to do this other thing. Because I was getting like these intuitive flashes for a good year building up to COVID of no, motherfucker, you got to do this shit right now and you got to be on it. And so that was something that I always gravitate towards and I never, never ignore. And I found myself in the process of doing what is my normal creative work as a way of trying to more indirectly approach these themes, instead transitioning over to, no, I have to straight up put it on the table and then try and diffuse the kind of controversial emotional response that people have so that I can reach out to a lot of normies who, if that diffusion isn't there, it's so heavy that it like backhands them and then they just aren't present anymore, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I've been vocal about my missteps at a Thanksgiving dinner many, many years ago of bringing up 9/11 and watching the table turn on me. And so it's part of this is knowing your audience, obviously, and knowing your information, because I also made the mistake of not really having my argument as well formulated as I thought I might've had. And so I realized that if you don't come at these people with first, like you said, you sort of need to disarm the situation, because there's so much combativeness when you try and talk about a topic that the media has invested, you know, a lot of energy to try and paint in one method, and you come at it from another angle and you say, listen, all this stuff is garbage, and you start talking to normie people and they go, well, what do you, you know, they instantly get defensive, and it's like, well, it's not even your information. Why are you defending this information? It's not yours. You didn't research it. You just saw it on CNN. And now you want to argue with me about it? You know, so I found, probably like a lot of us have, through trial and error, some ways are better. at connecting with people than others. Taking out your fire hose of information and sticking it in their mouth and opening it up, that doesn't work. Nobody likes to be lectured to. And I've just, if it's somebody that I think is interested in engaging or wants to get engaged in this conversation, I basically try to flip it and put it on them. What do you think about this situation in Yemen? What situation? Like, well, what do you think we should do about the situation in Yemen? I mean, with everything, they go, I didn't know there was a situation in Yemen. Oh yeah, there is. So, what do you think about I'm having a hard time trying to figure out why a third building fell on 9/11. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. What do you think about this third building that fell on 9/11? I didn't know there was a third. You didn't, you know? And so instead of, hey, come here, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you about building 7. And they're like, no, thank you. I'm good. So all of this has taken time for me, at least, to try and figure out how best to do it. And even still, just when you think you've got a formula, you know, put together, COVID comes along, and now and that just takes everything and throws it out the window. Cause now there's a brand new, polarizing topic that you may or may not be allowed to talk about. You certainly are not allowed to have a contradictory point of view. How are things in where you're in Edmonton? How are things in the Great White North? I mean, is it lockdown city there, or is it just or are you guys still sort of having some sort of one foot in reality?
No, there's no feed in reality here, but it's a very interesting way of processing it that is different than what it would be in other regions. And that's that everyone here is passive aggressive and like pathologically folksy. They're really nice people, but they're really bad at conflict and navigating controversy and having differing opinions online. They're vocal about it in a heated kind of like pissy house cat kind of way. But in real life, they sort of just stiffen up and you can tell immediately. So there are lockdowns here. By and large, people are supporting it, which is just a brutal, and it's very difficult to stomach and to be able to endure a population that is so polite that it relinquishes everything that is good and moral and decent for the sake of just going along and getting along. So that's basically the environment where I am.
Great. Oh, no. You first to the gas chambers.
Yeah, basically. And I toured Auschwitz, man. I've been inside the gas chambers. It was a really interesting thing when you go for that tour in Poland, because they take school kids for that. A lot of people are looking at shit through their phone. Like when you're in Auschwitz, half of the people were going from like the behind the glass divider where there's just mounds of human hair that the Nazis would shave off to create like dynamite fuses and stuff. And people are taking pictures of that on their fucking, like their tablets. I'm like, what the shit is going on? You're here and you're not here. What is that? So it's like that sort of felt resonance. Yeah.
We're in a weird time, man. It's like, and like you and I were talking about this before we started filming, I put a quote on, I just put just one little tweet that just, it's just a difficult time to be awake. Really is. It's like, I think a lot of people that watch the movie, the Matrix, they understand that dilemma that, you know, as you get about 2/3 of the way through the movie, one of the characters, you know, has the idea, I'd like to go back to the way it used to be. You know, I'd like to unknow all of this stuff and just go back to living the fantasy because it was so much better. I don't advocate that, of course, and I don't respect that, but I certainly do understand it. And what we've experienced now in the last, in the last year, I guess, coming up on a year, has been, you know, insanity masquerading as politeness or masquerading as thoughtfulness. Oh, I'll wear my mask so that I don't infect you. And it's like, no, the masks don't even work. It's like, I'm trying to protect you. How dare you? You know, and you're like, I didn't ask you to protect me and I didn't sign this social contract and I don't care to be participate in all this stuff, but I'm finding myself back in that same sort of feeling that I had after that Thanksgiving dinner when I brought up 9/11, which was, I just don't really want to interact with a lot of people that are going to tell me that I'm crazy, for rightfully having my eyes open and acknowledging the current situation. I'm not trying to say I have it all figured out, and I don't think any of us really are, but do we need to have it all figured out to understand that there's just an obvious agenda here?
Yeah, no, that's totally true. And as far as what you're talking about with like the way that people are substituting virtue signaling for virtue, you know, sometimes being virtuous is not a fucking comfortable thing.
Yeah.
And so that's what's happening is people who do not understand the situation have swapped virtue signaling for being virtuous. That's the best I can make of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, well, I mean, but when you're online, you know, and we're all online to an extent, but when you can't show people virtue in the real world, I guess you show it to them in the online world. And so you,
And I guess
I stand on Fauci.
Yeah, no. And to pick up what I'm saying, I'm not trying to be mean when I say that, because in their own world, in their own mind, they are doing the virtuous thing. To them, wearing a mask is like, I'm being a good person right now. And so hard.
I get that. Yeah, for sure. I understand. I don't even really blame those people. I feel like there's a huge segment of the population that is just doing what they are being told to do in order to make everybody safer. And I can't fault them for coming at it from that standpoint. I get that. I mean, that there's nothing wrong. There's obviously nothing wrong with that. But the problem is, it's like, well, we have to unpack this whole argument, because what you're being told is a lie. Who's telling it to you are liars. The people that stand, you know, who stands to profit from this? It's like, well, nobody stands to profit from this. This is a pandemic. Who could have known that this was coming? Oh, there's a lot of... I mean, I think T. Snyder knew that this was coming out. I mean, you've got shirts made for it. You've got, I mean, this is an operation, right?
Yeah. No, quite explicitly. The way that I described it recently, once again on Twitter, with a little back and forth with someone who was in the know, was to describe the cognitive dissonance that people have and why they've come to have it in the particular way that they do. And it's fundamentally an inability to conceive of what is happening. And the analogy that I use to represent that is this. Imagine if you drive a car up to a caveman. A caveman has never seen a machine before. To them, that's a fucking dragon. That's magic. Even if you take that car apart and show them each individual piece, they're going to look at that and be like, no, that's still magic, dude. You'd have to take each individual piece, build it in front of them, allow them to understand how it works and to manipulate it themselves, and only then does it cease to be magic. So to most people, we're describing what they intuitively regard as magic simply because they've never perceived and are thus incapable of conceiving that a machine this sophisticated exists and that it is ultimately what's running the world.
Yeah, that gets back into the J. Edgar Hoover quote about people would be paralyzed coming to realizing that the conspiracy, size of this conspiracy, it's so massive that in and of itself hides it.
Yeah.
From the public, because so when it first broke out, when the coronavirus situation first broke out, say the middle of March of 2020, when it first sort of in the US at least became a big deal, to me, I was holding back. And I was saying, well, I'm going to reserve my judgment until I see a little bit more. Then what I saw, and I'm obviously not a scientist. I don't know the ins and outs of this. There'll be some people that will argue viruses don't exist I don't know. But frankly, I don't need to know, because once I saw the Bill Gates component in the World Economic Forum step forward, then I knew it was an operation. But that only came from experience. That only came from me knowing who these people are. So I don't expect everybody out there to know the story of Bill Gates. I didn't until maybe, I didn't know who he really was until maybe, 15 years ago, which is, sounds like a long time for some people, but Bill Gates has been around for much longer than that. And there was a segment of time when I thought he was just a good dude who may happen to, strike it rich in a software company. And guess what? And then I even thought, oh, he's taking these vaccines and he's doing good. He's taking his money and putting it into vaccines. He's doing what we always said you should do if you have billions of dollars, save the world. But then I came to understand who he is, who his family is, what he's up to, and all that. So when I see Bill Gates step out, instantly I know that this is an operation. But I feel like the vast majority of people didn't have that. They didn't have that recognition. And for them, they're still waiting on it. They still are waiting for the nightly news to come out and say it's all a gigantic scam.
That's exactly true. And I think what you're touching on there is the note of what is it that brings awareness to people. For you, it is the familiarity with the information that clued you off to the fact that this is de facto automatically a scam because these motherfuckers are involved. And that is unfortunately the way that it works. They're the same assholes throughout history who then have kids who are more or less indoctrinated into the same thing by one means or another, be it sadistic or not. And that's kind of just how it rolls. And so for me, I'm more of an intuitive individual who floats based on a feeling that comes out of it. And whether it is a feeling that is coming to people naturally through nature, or whether it is a feeling that is something they are made to feel. And a big part of what the artistic process is understanding the difference between what people feel themselves and what they have been made to feel, and then using those both as ingredients to go about helping them to greater realizations, both about themselves and the world around them. And so the premise of what is the thing that clues people off to something being a reality, the vast majority of people, it has fuck all nothing to do with information and everything to do with this felt sense that we know is false security, but to them is the very definition of reality. And that's why, like, yeah, they have to see it on the news. That's never going to happen, ever. No.
Never. Yeah. But to them, they're the people that need the UFO to land on the White House lawn. You know, they have to see that.
It's probably going to at this point, you know? Like, they're going to go to that degree.
I tell you what, I've gotten a good education on vaccines over the last couple of years from writing books that have to do with it and talking to people and talking to scientists, talking to doctors, talking to people that cover it for a living. There is something there. And so when you come into 2020 with an understanding about what vaccines are, And I'm not trying to say that they hurt every single person every single time, but there is a component of the vaccine industry that they would like to be kept under wraps because it's doing some real damage. And so, and that's putting it mildly, but I know that going into 2020. So when I see CNN, MSNBC, Fox News start the process of, well, when is this, we've got this coronavirus situation that has come to our shores. When are we going to be saved? When is the vaccine coming? It immediately went to vaccine. And that to me was yet another, as if Bill Gates wasn't enough, but as soon as the vaccine conversation started, that to me was another indicator that this is an operation. Because if it was really about health, we'd be hearing about vitamin C and getting, you know, drinking lots of water and getting exercise and getting sunlight and going to the gym and doing all these things. We didn't hear any of that. We heard stay in your home until the vaccine's ready. And then we're going to line you up single file line, black people first.
Yeah.
And give them the injections.
No, I know.
And I'm sitting here going, am I in some sort of dystopian acid trip that, like, I'm the only person that can see what's going on here? Clearly I'm not. I know that there are others that see this, but I felt like I was back in those 9/11 days when I was trying to talk to someone and they were going, yeah, but Osama bin Laden. And you're going, no, no, no. And they're going, yeah, but Osama bin Laden. And you're like, no, stop saying that. That's not what this is. You know, and I feel the same thing. Fauci said, and it's like, oh shit, here we go again. Are we going to have to deal with this for the next 20 years like we did with 9/11?
I think we're at a point right now where every single individual, both within the truth community and extending beyond that to our own families, needs to start taking this shit seriously on a level that they never really entertained before. Yeah. And what that ultimately culminates as, it's granular. What I find a lot of people are waiting for is the solution that is going to come along for everybody. That's not how fucking revolution works. Right. You, whoever you are listening to this, have unique ability, network of people, and a variety of different opportunities that stand before you at present, posed to you as if obstacles. It is your personal and individual responsibility to find a way to overcome them. Maybe you'll fuck it up. Maybe you won't do it right on the first try. You keep trying and trying again. And that's the thing, that note of we need to be different. We need to be creative and playful and open and step beyond the margins of the DARPA program that has created a digital model for what each and every one of us is going to do every day of our lives. Fuck that garbage. Right now, today, do something different that the computer system thinks you're going to do, and already you're outsmarting them. That's how it works. Yeah. That kind of thing.
But I wonder, and you've done work on this too. I wonder about, you know, if you're thinking long-term and you know that you're going to need the control of the mass, you're going to need the people to do what you tell them to do. You're going to need their support. You start a program by which you go, you start to dumb them down and remove their ability for critical thought. And maybe even at the same time, remove their connection to their higher self through calcifying their pineal gland. And what we have seen over the last 50 years in the United States, and it's not limited to the United States, of course, is the introduction of fluoride into the water system and the effects that has on a person, on an individual, but collectively what the effects that has, that it lowers IQ. It's kind of like lead paint. It calcifies your pineal gland so that you have a harder time connecting with some of the more important components of what it's like to be alive. And you become human technically, but less human because of it. What is the role of fluoride in prepping the societies for the acceptance of even more and more unrealistic and bizarre expectations? COVID, you know, everybody's going to die. COVID, Project Bluebeam, which is coming, you know,
that's what I mean. That's what I meant when they said they're going to land on the White House. Is that bullshit?
Yeah. Right. Right. So it's like, we know. So if you work backwards and you go, okay, we know we're going to do the fake alien invasion that Wernher von Braun talked about. We know we're going to do the fake coronavirus scam that's going to, everybody's going to die. We know we're going to do 9/11, which is going to, people are going to need to, all of these things are going to require people to suspend reality, suspend belief, to lower their understanding of what's actually happening and believe some false narrative. And it sounds like if I were trying to do that, I would first want to make sure that the people I was propagandizing didn't have the ability for critical thought, because that would be the only way they could check me on this. So fluoride gets introduced into the water stream, which turns everybody dumb and docile. And then they overlay these next big lies on top of that. And here we are 50 years out, two or three generations, depending on families, of continued fluoride use. It seems to me, and maybe you can fill me in on this, that they're prepping us, they're dumbing us down in order to get us to believe things that we should not rightly believe.
Well, yeah, that's very explicitly. I suppose the way in which I approach this subject, it has to do with the level of our understanding of what reality is and what ultimately the architects of that reality are. So with you, I can talk about it fluently and openly and say that this is a mass genocide by convergent means. It's not a singular note that they hit to kill everyone. It's a gradual accumulation of things over time. That's what the modern medical kind of system and network of associations within those various systems is. It's something that is ostensibly labeled as if it is for your betterment, when in actuality is very much to your detriment. 2016, they found that the number three death in the United States was from medical malpractice or error. That's pretty grievous. That's horrific.
Yeah.
And people still approach all of this stuff as if it's something that is a good thing. And so when I approach people who aren't familiar with this, I have to almost reassure them that it's not that bad. When I talk to someone who's more like in your level of understanding, it's like, this is a fucking genocide.
It's bad.
It's really bad. It's so sick and deranged that the average individual cannot go there. And so in my show, I don't go there. I don't talk about the fact that if you add that with the vaccine schedule, with the diminishing nutrients, with the spiritual poisoning, with a variety of other different psychological warfare techniques, the entrainment through media, the way in which we are mass traumatized through the relaying of information, not only within the news that we receive, but so too the predictive programming that gradually conditions us to regard that news as reality, you start to understand that the way these people think is in a time frame that the average individual never conceives. They think intergenerationally.
Yes.
We think, what am I going to do this week? And right. That's not exactly a things that can be mutually held and are compatible notation. So you have to step beyond the margins of this week and be like, if I wanted to murder someone in 40 years and do it one day at a time, what the fuck would that look like?
That's right. That's crazy, but that is true. They take, and I've always been very, look, I credit where credit is due. These psychopathic maniac families that are running the world, they take their time. They're very deliberate.
That's why they're fucking up so bad right now. They jumped the gun by 10 years. And I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Sorry to interrupt, but
It's funny you say that because, we talked about Agenda 21 and we talked about Agenda 2030 and said, all right, well, they set the goalpost for the year 2030. I've been talking to a lot of people because I feel like they moved the goalpost up 5 years now, you know, that they're like, oh, it's going to be Agenda 2025 now because we're making such progress. That could be a good thing or a bad thing. Good for us in the sense that anytime we get them to get off of their schedule and hurry up, they like you said, they have the opportunity to make mistakes because they take such a long-term view of this and their approach is so methodical and psychotic, but set over such a long period of time that, like you said, and like David Icke said, it's the totalitarian tiptoe. It's not A to Z, it's A to B and then B to C and then C to D.
Yeah.
Just do it in these incremental steps and it makes it less noticeable, more stable. When you make these changes, they tend to stick and things like that. And so I wondered about that, how these, these people will set up a project like COVID and you go, ooh, it just came out of a wet market in China from some bats or something. and everyone says, well, look, stay away from China. It's crazy there. Okay. Please explain to me why we have vaccine patent, why we have patents well in advance talking about this, why we have Fauci talking about it 3 years in advance, saying that Trump is going to get a pandemic during his term, why we have Bill Gates negotiating contact tracing deals with members of the House of Representatives in the summer of 2019 before this. Hell of a crystal ball, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. It's really surreal from our side of the fence when you've been, I've personally been researching this for only about 15 years. And I say only because you're bumping shoulders with motherfuckers who've been doing this for like 50 years. And it's like, damn, you know, and you're every single day is like, oh my God, what is it going to be today? And I'm reading about Phoenix program right now and a variety of other different things that I already know the gist of, but it's like, hey, they ass rape people with eels. Did you know that? That's a fun one. So it's like,
I feel like that's going on one of your shirts.
Oh, I'm not going to, so everyone listening, my show is designed to be very playful and light. And I approach the darkest shit in a way that, like Charlie said, he can speak to it and it resonates with that kind of note that you need to bring out. And what you're talking about with like the convergence sort of darkness and the doom and gloom that they slowly bring over us. So we don't even understand that that storm is brewing, even when there's fucking lightning overhead. It's like, oh no, someone just really loudly farted. It'd be like, are you farted? No, that's fucking lightning. And so they sort of placate them. That's one side of it. The other side of it that we sort of need to remember and rekindle is the way nature responds to that. And you can look at that in little kind of representations within like the pigeons attacking 5G towers, like pecking those. And that's literally nature responding like, no, fuck this. It's giving us a headache. We're not doing it. But on the other side of it, you can look at what is the failed response of their own programs. And the one that I personally speak to that I can bring to with a great deal of experience, both within my own life and so too within my family, is that of video games. And I say this because I co-authored a book with my mother called Play Reality, How Video Games Are Changing Everything. And a lot of what people bring to the conversation about video games is to regard them as an entrainment technology and also as something that dumbs people down and conditions them to basically become passive. But that is one side of what's going on. There's a whole other side of this that is our natural response that the elites in their gradual kind of draconian stepping on our throats have not factored in. And so what video games are ultimately doing is they are both teaching you to be in the matrix and they're teaching you to wake up from being in a matrix. So every time you turn off a console, you're practicing waking up. And every time that you dream, what video games do is they sort of like inoculate against nightmares. So you're practicing fighting back against people within the game. You are actively controlling through the controller. It used to be that with a TV, you'd hold a remote, you'd think that you were in control, but really you're just tuning into them controlling you. Video games ever so slightly flip that paradigm in a way in which it actively encourages the gradual refinement of consciousness through the harnessing of flow in order to philosophically jujitsu the very entrainment technology they had hoped to be the final nail in our coffin. And so a lot of people talk about this as if it's only bad. That's one side of it. Yeah, there are bad things about it, but there's this whole other side, which is nature's response, which is, oh no, fuck that. I'm going to become stronger because of this. Mm-hmm. And so there's that kind of back and forth pendulum swing.
Yeah. Yeah. I have friends in the video game industry too. Yeah. I'll have to ask them if they're programming reality. Might deny it. He might say, we're just trying to make cool games, but there's something to that because when you play video games, you sort of dip into, you become an avatar, you go somewhere else. I'm not entirely convinced that it's necessarily a bad thing either. Like you said, I remember, you remember that cartoon, The Far Side. The Far Side had a picture of a lady, it was obviously a cartoon. It was always just one image. And it was a mother reading, like dreaming. She was reading a newspaper and it was, jobs, like help wanted or jobs, posting of the newspaper she was reading. It was like all of these jobs, 100K plus, can you free Zelda from the castle? And she was like dreaming because her son was sitting in front of her playing video games and she was dreaming that there's going to be $100,000 a year jobs for rescuing Zelda. And it always made me think that like, that was a joke. That was like from the 80s or maybe even 90s, but it was a joke, but now it's not. Now that's like a real industry. Like the video game industry is bigger than the movie industry.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is one of those things that I continue. Like, so that's, I'm going to pick up on that. It's a hilarious example. That's really funny. One, in the sense that if you take it literally, it seems preposterous because it's like, obviously that's not going to be a job saving Zelda. But if you take it as a metaphor for the leveling up and the gradual refinement over the process of growing up with these empowering kind of systems of feedback, then maybe you're not going to be saving Zelda in the game, maybe you're going to find a Zelda in real life and help to save her. Ooh. So it's that sort of transference that I'm talking about. It is an active participant in the encouraging of consciousness while at the same time, and so this has to do with the manner of exposure. It has to do with resilience is optimized between within 2 to 4 hours of play a day. And that varies on the individual. Under 2 hours, your resilience goes down. Over 4 hours, your resilience goes down. So what it is it's something where if you're able to harness it for what it's good for, you are able to then transfer that over to empower you within the real world. So the cartoon you're talking about, that's a beautiful example of that. It's both a joke and a powerful reality, you know?
Wow. So, but I think we would both agree that being the guy in South Korea that drops dead in a
video
game I've been playing video games for 48 hours straight and then drops dead. Maybe don't do that, but there are some benefits here. And you mentioned something earlier about predictive programming. And I feel like this is an under talked about component of this whole thing.
Oh yeah.
And I think the reason why it doesn't get the sort of respect that it deserves is because it sounds so far-fetched. And the first time you hear about it, you go, get out of here with that nonsense conspiratorial bullshit. And you're like, wait, hang on a second. There is absolutely something to predictive programming existing on television, movies, video games, whatever. It's a real thing. How does it work?
Okay. The way that I would personally, I'm assuming that everyone kind of knows what predictive programming is, but I'm going to kind of add, like, attempt to throw out a description. It's the gradual entrainment of an individual to think of things or to limit what they do not think of by way of that which they are exposed to in a casual way over the course of their everyday existence. And so that can be anything. The way in which it ultimately works is it's more powerful than the news. We are entrained by sort of these predictive programming matrices, which then the news eventually happen. And because of how we have been entrained, that's the thing that makes it latch on as reality. If you remove the gradual entrainment of humanity, they wouldn't have it in their brain to be receptive to the absolute fact that it is reality. So if you don't entrain them, it doesn't snap in. Instead, they have to make of it what they will. They have to use their active conscious thought. They have to use their imagination. They have to talk to other people. So if you predictively program people over long enough periods of time, and we're at the point where this happens your entire life right now. That's what Hollywood is. Hollywood, insofar as what it represents, is not the epicenter, but I'd say one of the strong arms of the CIA. That's one of their greatest weapons, and they know it. And that's why the idea of approaching that in earnest is something where it's very, very difficult for people to conceive of. And also their own felt nostalgic threads are deeply entwined with it. You have to approach music from like the Doors and be all like, I'm not going to listen to that shit anymore. And for people who don't understand Jim Morrison or his father and all that kind of stuff, that sounds like, but I like the Doors. They were cool and they were hip and all that. And be like, no, man, there's a lot going on there. And right. So it's really difficult. But that's the strong arm that I see. And it's a strong arm because it's so big and so massive. Like imagine a bicep curling around the globe. You know, it's slowly crushing the thing. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what the NRO badge in your book, The Octopus and Global Control, yeah, touch on, is that massive scale that we aren't, but it's a very real thing. And predictive programming is a huge, huge part of doing that to people, man.
Yeah, it's like planting idea seeds.
Yeah.
Watering them.
Yes.
With the media, and then they grow up, and then it all seems very normal to us. The normalization of things like, you know, I'll tell you what I have realized. I know that the Department of Defense has an office in Hollywood that if you want to borrow their, you want to use their aircraft carriers, they have final script approval on your. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But the role of the intelligence agencies in Hollywood, the role of predictive programming in Hollywood has been very troublesome to me, because what if I look at what I'm seeing now and extrapolate where this is going, I'm very nervous about 100-foot animals coming out of the ocean and attacking people on islands, because all I keep seeing is Jurassic Park, King Kong, Godzilla, Transformer movies, all these, well, maybe not King Kong so much as Godzilla, all these things are gigantic animals coming out of the water, destroying humanity. I feel like, Jesus Christ, do they have that plan for us? I mean, everything seems to be, every Michael Bay movie's got a little insanity in it, and it seems to me like they are prepping us for an invasion by gigantic transformer robots.
Okay, I completely agree, but I'm going to qualify a lot of that agreement with sort of a juxtaposition to what you brought up earlier with your initial thoughts of Bill Gates. I remember one time I was watching a Grand Theft World podcast, which, by the way, if you guys haven't checked out yet, it's a really great podcast. Richard Grove runs it. It's wonderful.
It is great.
And at one point during that, it was just a casual conversation between a couple of the members in the control room. And one of the guys was talking about how a long time ago he was speaking to someone about Bill Gates. And the person who was talking about Bill Gates was saying, oh, he's just came from a farmland family and he's an innocent dude. And the guy's like, whoa, 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 that's not the reality. So he took like 15 minutes to explain to him what the reality was. And what they were discussing on that show is the notion that there are regionally seated propaganda campaigns in order to like smoke and mirror cover the reality of these people. And so what you're talking about with the idea of there are these giant monsters coming for us, I completely fucking agree, but it's going to be a regionally specific thing. It isn't just going to be one thing. Project Bluebeam, yeah, it could be a giant fucking UFO, but what if in a different part of the world, they're deeply religious? Then it's better if it's a giant Jesus or if it's a giant demon. And so if we're all disagreeing with one another about the shit that we're seeing in the sky, if in one part of the world, they're freaking about a demon, and on the other side of the world, they're talking about the state puff marshmallow man. It's right. going to be pretty fucking difficult for us to talk to each other. So absent the understanding of the regional compartmentalization of propaganda campaigns on this level, and the degree to which we always latch on one singular, like a variable that accounts for all of it, this is going to be like them unleashing not just the Kraken, but like cracking into whatever the fuck they are able to imagine. And we're just like, can I go back to watching movies, please? This is just ridiculous.
Your own personal Kraken gets
in your head.
I was talking to Dean Henderson on, we were talking about the first Gulf War, the 91 Gulf War. And
I heard the first 20 minutes of that. That was intense, man.
He's talking about how they were using voice-to-skull technology back then.
Yeah, I know.
And that the Iraqis were like, I don't want it. You know, like, I remember that because I remember them going like, you know, they're showing the footage of all these people coming out of the, you know, coming out of the bunkers and trenches and like with their hands up and running over to the, and Americans were like, what is going on here? I think these guys are supposed to be hardcore. They were doing that. And I know that they use that, that same technology on, was it Abu Zubaydah? It was one of those terrorist guys that they had, and they made Allah visit him in his prison cell in Guantanamo Bay and tell him that he needed to confess. And it was, and you know, and then all of a sudden the floodgates open and he's like, let me tell you, I'm going to tell you all about the operation. They're like, holy shit, this stuff is working. So I would imagine that we're about to get in the future, we're going to get some version of voice to skull technology, Project Bluebeam, one of these things. We're going to get, we're getting prepped for it.
All of them. I agree.
All of them. All at once.
Catherine Austin Fitz over the Solari Report, she was mentioning what a back and forth that she had with one of her subscribers was, speaking to what you're bringing up right now. And the scenario was basically this. They were out on the town and there was this Antifa mob and they started violently assaulting one of the people. And the person was finally able to get his friend away from that, but then he tried to talk to the people who had started assaulting them. And in their own mind, they were absolutely convinced that they had seen this man throw a Nazi salute. They were absolutely convinced that that's what they saw. And this was not something they imagined. They weren't on drugs. And his attempt to talk to them, to actually have a civilized conversation, was incompatible with whatever the fuck it is they had just experienced. Mm-hmm. And so we have to start to enter into the realm of drug addicted populations and the amount of experimentation that has been done on that and how you can build upon that based on like electrosmog and a number of other sort of things that stack onto it. And so what you're describing, oh yeah, that's going to happen. Very likely it already is happening. And we're continuing to give one another the benefit of the doubt that there's still just the raw humanity and the sanity that comes with that. But we're so deeply entrained and we're also being preyed upon by this kind of technology that you're describing, even beyond the margins of what we ourselves have thus far come to understand. So what's that going to look like? Oh my God, it's going to get fucking weird. I did not expect this shit to be this fucking weird. Coming up on the, whatever the fuck you want to call this, the apocalypse, the Great Awakening, depends on which side you ultimately align with spiritually. But holy shit, it's a lot more ironic and preposterous than I'd ever anticipated it would ever be.
I agree. I feel like even if it, you know, we're out there when we're talking about our conspiracy theories or whatever they want. I mean, we're certainly out on the fringes, but what we have experienced out conspiracy theoried us even. I mean, we're to the point now where it's hard to distinguish between what is reality and what is, what is parody. Yeah. One of the comments that you'll see a lot of times on posts on Twitter when they're retweeting a story will be not Babylon Bee. This is not Babylon. Like they have to specifically say, this is not the Babylon Bee, which is a satirical paper / website that makes fun of reality in a way that's so funny and so close to reality, but yet it's not. And we're now in a situation in 2020/2021 where we have to differentiate between when we're talking about reality and we're talking about parody or science fiction, because they're so blurred right now that it is almost, it's difficult to tell the difference.
I agree. I think that that is a gradual buildup to them unfurling whatever it is has made them so arrogant that they think they can jump the gun like this. They have something up their sleeve that is massive. And it's coming. We have our little hints for that. If I see something blue in the sky, I'm basically just going to go around, knock on doors, and be like, hey, this is Project Bluebeam. Don't watch the mainstream news. And then I'm going to go to the next house, be like, this is Project Bluebeam. Don't watch the mainstream news. And maybe just someone who's totally just not even like screaming from the rooftops about it, but is just like, oh my God, I'm so sick of this shit. Maybe that's the emotional tone that people will need to come back to sanity, you know?
Yeah.
Because you don't see that in the movies. You don't see a guy walking around in the middle of like a Tom Cruise movie being like, oh, by the way, this is a psyop. And then he just walks away.
Right, right, right. You know? Yeah, we're living in a psychological operation. I watched there's the footage of like the news anchor guy who's out there in the hurricane and he's bracing himself because he's getting blown away. And in the background behind him are two kids in shorts and t-shirts walking down the sidewalk, totally fine, in the middle of this hurricane that's blowing this reporter. So it's like, that to me is a perfect encapsulation of the world in which we live in, which is, if you're experiencing a lot of this stuff, there's no there, as Clinton said. But if you're watching it on TV, it's, oh my God, we're all going to die. It's coming to get us. And another thing that I saw during this pandemic, and man, this didn't just epitomize the situation that we're in. It was a picture from behind the scenes of the setup of a news reporter out in the field sort of report. And it was at a grocery store. And the way it was set up was the camera was on a tripod and it was shooting. It was aimed to shoot down the aisle to show that there was no food in this aisle, that this whole side of the aisle was just, toilet paper shortages, food shortages, all this stuff. But the picture was taken from behind where the camera was set up. And in the picture, you could see that all the food from the shelves had just been moved back behind the camera.
Yeah.
And so that is how they frame reality. So if you've watched that news report, your version of the world, your world is different. Your world is, there's a run on toilet paper. There's a run on everything. Canned goods. I need to get to the grocery store. But if you were actually there, or if you saw that one picture, your view of the world is completely different. And once you've seen that picture, you can never unsee it. You know that that's part of media manipulation. And it's like this race that we're all having to run, which is how can we alert the masses that are not aware of this fast enough to get ahead of the curve, which is the intentional dumbing down, the pathological lying of the mainstream media and big pharma. It's like we're in a race. They're in a race trying to capture everybody's mind. We're in a race trying to wake everybody up. And it's a matter of like who can do it the best and the fastest.
100%. I completely agree that that's the situation. And that's a really good example as far as like illustrating the absurdity of the situation, the scarcity mindset that is injected into people to make them more primal and more hostile, and how a lot of that is just ultimately, if you get right down to it, it's completely fabricated. The abundance on this planet is surreal. The scarcity mentality is the tourniquet around our necks and our brains. And so that's a perfect example, I think.
Yeah. Well, so is this going to lead to a revolution?
That's on us. And the onus is on us in a very big way to. What I find this is in a microcosm, macrocosm kind of reflection. So I have the tempered patience and ability to be able to reach out in a heartfelt manner to my fellow man, no matter how thick-skulled, ignorant, and whatever the shit qualifier you want to throw in there, because I can understand how bad they've been lied to, that they are actively being poisoned, that there's all these magician's tricks that they don't even understand. And if you don't understand how that shit works, it's gonna work. It's really sophisticated. So I get it. The thing that I'm personally experiencing and I'm having the most like trauma in this with is trying to talk to my fucking family who still don't get it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, and there are certain people who are receptive that I'm basically just, I am going to get through to this person. I'm done being nice about it. The nice approach I take with most people because that's what they need from a stranger. But I've been talking about this shit for 15 years straight with my dad and my stepmother. And I'm kind of just at my, it's like, look, guys, you need to start watching this stuff. I've said everything that I can. Only the process of gnosis, which for those who don't understand the word, it means the actual experiencing of something, mm-hmm. will be that which illustrates the reality to you. And so I'm slowly trying to send them things that I think are closer to their home base. They're both psychologists. One of them specializes with HIV and AIDS. And she still doesn't know that there's no proof that HIV causes AIDS, you know. And so I sent her the Carrie Mullis talk, going into that, and mm-hmm. and a variety of different other notations to be able to like look. And I don't like that I have to approach it in that way, but we're at such a head here where it's like, sometimes you can't be fucking nice about this. Other times you have to be nice about it. So it's that emotional range that we need to rediscover. And that is the very definition of expanding our consciousness, both in the sense of performative mannerisms that we can harness to be able to impart an emotional note that people need to hear at a pivotal moment in time. And so too, just in being able to empathize and understand how difficult it might be on their side. So in the microcosm, macrocosm reflection, I see this as a huge expansion of consciousness in response to their desperate need to sort of stomp on us and keep us down.
Yeah, they certainly have the need to do that. And it's like you mentioned something earlier about a magician, you know, doing tricks. And there's an interesting thing about the magician doing tricks. You know, people pay good money to come see a magician fool them. But once you know how the trick is done, they can't fool you with it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like George Bush said, you know, fool me once. Just kidding. You know, it's like, once you see how it works, you made the caveman with the car analogy. This is once you understand how this works and you see it for yourself, then you can never unsee it. You can never unknow it. So you're talking about having this conversation with your mom and stepdad about the, coming to understand what is actually happening for us. And I feel like you never know what's going to wake somebody up. And I'm not even talking COVID. I'm just talking about in general. Like for me, it was Building 7. But for other people, it might have been Vietnam. You know, it might have been, I knew that was bullshit. And then I found out about the Gulf of Tonkin and Uncle Bob died there, whatever. Once you see the trick, it becomes increasingly more difficult for them to use that trick over and over again. And if there's one thing that we've learned from watching these maniacs that run the world is that for as well-financed and as well thought out as they seem to be, they don't really have much of a variety. They tend to use the same tactics over and over again. Yeah. And so it seems like that might be their Achilles heel. It might give us the opportunity to capitalize on that or to attack them where they're weak, which is the fact that they're not very creative in the ways that they come across. Once they decide that it's just going to be a depopulation agenda, they're very blunt in how they do it. So if we can wake people up to the strategies in which these maniacs use, then it's hard to use mind control on somebody that's watching out for mind control being used on them. You know what I mean?
No, totally. You're 100% right. We're on the same page about the situation. I'm trying to constantly brainstorm ways to figure out how to reach out to other people. And ultimately what I've come to realize, I think, is it's not my job to reach out to everyone, even though that technically is my job, but it's your job too, because that's what we do. But some people are going to hear some voices and they're not going to hear other ones. And they're going to resonate with some presentations and they're not going to resonate with other ones. Some people you may never be able to reach out to. But if you walk over to your friend Doug and say, hey, Doug, here's all this information, and he hears you, maybe he'll be able to reach out to them. So it is encouraging those networks and associations of engagement. Don't bang your head against a brick wall. Understand that you're in a labyrinth. Find the way around. So it's that creativity, like you said, they lack it. We have an abundance of it. We need to return to it and to start to understand that it is our individual sort of mesh networks of interconnectivity that are the greatest kind of asset that we have as human beings to be able to tap into now and not kill ourselves in the process, hopefully.
Yeah. And what's funny is that you speaking of that, you've done a really good job of using your creativity in an artistic sense through directing, through writing, through podcasting, through your art, through your merchandise, all of that stuff seems like a really good way to, it seems like you've taken it upon yourself to use your creativity to beat them at their own game by exposing what they're up to.
That's because I think people are walking around with barcodes on them, thinking that that's the way the world works, mm-hmm. because that by and large is the way that the world works, but that's not the reality underneath the illusion that's been built. And so by reaching out to, okay, so basically what I did is I figured out the branding that I felt would be able to reach the most people in a palatable and manageable way. And then I integrated that felt identity of branding such that people who are accustomed to being branded, as in the barcode I was just mentioning, would be able to kind of conceive of something, or at the very least not be fully threatened by it. And that's a big step. If you can say something to someone and they don't erupt in a like volatile way, that's progress for where we're at right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know? Like, holy shit, he didn't shoot me. That's amazing. You know, it's like, that's where we're at right now, but it's true. So I'm like, all right, I need to figure out how the fuck I can communicate to that to other people. And I remember, so like when COVID started, I was in Europe having my trip absolutely ruined by my parents, who would not stop freaking out about it. And I'm like, you guys don't understand how these system works. For the love of God, leave me alone. And I just wanted to like make it through my time and then to come back. And eventually they did. Like, so the way they organized the PSYOP in Europe was they closed all of the borders more or less at once, so that I know people who were on a train crossing the border from Germany. They stopped the train. They had people go on it, scream at everyone to take out their passports. They identified anyone who wasn't a national and sent them back the other direction. It was some like traumatizing shit. Whoa. And so those were the kind of like organized emotional notes that were being played internally at the time. And so I was sitting there in the airport in France, where they closed all of the restaurants. There was only one place you could get food, and it was completely overwhelmed and picked over. They weren't allowing people to sit next together to eat, and yet people were sleeping shoulder to shoulder in the airport to be able to catch their flight overnight. It's conditioned insanity. They had 20 or 30 different armed soldiers from the French military patrolling, walking back casually through the airport, arbitrarily stopping to check people's suitcases. This is a profound PSYOP that was multifaceted and organized in a variety of different ways. And so I'm sitting there in this fucking environment, and there's this chick opposite me who we're stuck in the same area. So we end up talking, and she works in a major advertising firm in New York. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, because I know what she does and I know she's not awake. And I don't say that as a judgmental thing. I'm like, can you give me your kind of thoughts and feedback on this work I'm doing? And I show her the illustrations that I did for the show that I made. And she's like, oh, wow, that's actually really cute and nice. And it doesn't come across in like this arrogant, egotistical way that conspiracy usually does, this highly academic variant. Because a lot of, we don't understand how difficult or heavy this shit is for most people. So I'm just like, all right, how about a cute bunny? Oh, by the way, the government's trying to kill you. Oh, hey, it's that kind of thing. And so that's the whole approach I've taken with the show. And I think that for some people, that might just be the fucking note they need to hear to be able to get tapping their toe to the actual beat of our hearts, you know?
Yeah. Well, the show is awesome. Thanks. And it's, and like you said, I mean, it might be the way that some people need to have this stuff explained to them. Like, I'm going to do it in a way that's very lighthearted, and what I connect to it very, very much so, because you do it, you explain it in a way that's very simple and doesn't come across as preachy. And you also showed that, I mean, it's also clear that you're passionate about it. You bring your artwork into it, your editing skill, the whole thing. It's a fun show to watch. Tell people where they can find you, where they can find your work, where they can find your merchandise, where they can support you in any way.
Yeah, for sure. So my main two websites, the new show that we're talking about now, which is Conspiracy Synergy, that's at conspiracysynergy.com. My name is Teace, which is T-E-A-C-E. And my personal website is teace.ca, because I'm in Canada. But if you go to Skynet and enter that information in, I'm sure I'll still pop up. I don't think I've been purged from the internet just yet, but we'll see where we are a couple of years from now.
Hey, look, the day's not over yet. There's still time. That's T. Snyder, everybody. He's the best. Go check out his work. Support him. Follow him on Twitter. I'll have all his links in the description. And if you like this show, and if you like the work that we're doing, consider sharing this broadcast with your friends and family, because God knows we're not going to get any help from the algorithms on that. Teace, you're the best. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, Charlie. Great talking to you.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.